So my name's Amber Karen Nicholas, and my pronouns are they, them.
What are you currently doing and what are you studying?
Yeah, so I'm currently doing a PhD at La Trobe University, School of Humanities and Social Sciences. So that takes up a lot of my time. But other things that I'm doing, I'm also a research assistant at the University of Melbourne, and I'll probably just let you know a bit about what my PhD is on. So my big loves are disability studies, critical disability studies. So I'm trying to merge that with critical carceral studies or critical criminology, which are kind of more critical approaches to looking at, what gets constructed as crime and things like that. So I'm particularly looking at the experience of people who are subjected to involuntary mental health treatment, and I'm using treatment with quotation marks in my hands. While they live in the community. So particularly people with a mental health related disability or a psychosocial disability, as some people have different ways of talking about it. So yeah, that's me.
Amazing. In a few sentences, what was your experience of the Decarcerating Disability Reading Group? What do you think are the benefits of being part of such a group with other disabled people?
Yeah, so this year I was part of a disabled people-led reading group on the book Decarcerating Disability, Deinstitutionalization and Prison Abolition, which was the book that came out just this year by an American disability studies and mad studies scholar called Liat Ben-Moshe. It was, first of all, I was really happy to be invited to be a part of it by some really awesome sort of disability justice activists, Ben O'Malley Hermans and Georgia Mantle, who put a lot of effort into making the space accessible, inclusive, and welcoming. And the best part about it, I think, is just getting to really like connect what you're reading to real life and the context that you're in, and but also the activism that we're all kind of interested in, particularly like disability justice frameworks and abolition frameworks. So that was really great, and it was just a highlight of my lockdown period as well, being here in Nam in Melbourne. So that was really great, and I got to connect with others and yeah, talk about make some really like theory dense kind of academic complex ideas more real and applied to real life. So that was really great, and learning from other people's experiences. It was invaluable. It was a really great space.
What are two strong points you took away from the book, Decarcerating Disability?
So I might be probably get too convoluted at this point, but let me know if I am. I think one of the biggest points, and this is kind of like this central one of the central arguments of the book, but I found this really exciting, and I was really excited about this book when it was coming out for this reason. But it's really the importance of connecting prison or penal abolition with deinstitutionalization. Basically, it's trying to argue that they share a logic that is, or deinstitutionalization has a logic that is anti-carceral or abolitionary, which to me is a really exciting idea. So, I guess in disability spaces, what we might call deinstitutionalization, it has a link to, it's primarily about the ending or closure or abolition of disability-related or specific carceral spaces. To be more specific, large-scale, often state-run institutions, so, former asylums that often later became psychiatric hospitals and residential facilities, not exclusively for, but often in people with intellectual disability. So it was really trying to connect those two struggles, and although deinstitutionalization isn't often spoken about being kind of abolitionary, the book's trying to argue that inherently it is about a future where there is no need for segregating people based on disability away from the community, and trying to link that with abolition. So that was the key point that I took away, that the struggles are really inherently linked, and that deinstitutionalization should be framed as an abolition issue, but disability also needs to be framed as an abolition issue as well. So that was one of the key points that I took away from it. The other big learning for me, I guess, the other key point was to be a bit more critical about how deinstitutionalization gets framed in abolitionist spaces, having a bit more meat on the bones of how we talk about what deinstitutionalization was and what it led to. So sometimes I guess the common narrative about what deinstitutionalization was that people were dumped on the streets, and these things kind of lead to the rise of prisons taking the role of institutions, particularly for people who, you know, don't have a safety net and often are the most marginalized in our community. But the book kind of argues that when we blame deinstitutionalization for these things, we're often, we have to be aware of how that kind of intersects with backlash towards the very idea of deinstitutionalization. So, and having a better appraisal of how different factors are actually to blame for these phenomena. So the removal of social safety nets and things like that. And of course, not to use too much jargon, but, you know, neoliberal reforms, greater social insecurity and precarity. These are the things that create the conditions for much of sort of what happens in the post-deinstitutionalization context. You know, increased incarceration of disabled people, particularly people with, you know, cognitive disability or psychiatric or mental health related disability. So that was a really key point that I took away from it, is to see how those arguments can actually bolster the claims or arguments of people who are actually maybe advocating for return to forms of return to institutionalization or the continuation of contemporary forms of institutionalization. That was a really key point, and it really, she obviously made much better in the book, but that was a really key point that I took away from it, and it really enlightened me about that part, about different dynamics that are happening in these common narratives. I hope that wasn't too long.
That was excellent. Thank you.
Good.
Wasn't convoluted at all. It was so incredibly clear. Final question. So what is one question you still have after reading the book?
That's a really good question. This was something that we unpacked a lot in the reading group, actually. And it's about how the book, it's a really good book, but, you know, like a lot of American writers and scholars, it's really occupied with the North American kind of context. I think the book does a really great job of unpacking settler colonialism and in saying that because it's talking about a settler colonial context, there's so much we can apply here in so-called Australia. But there's also kind of an assumption in the book that what happens in the US applies everywhere, which I think, you know, not necessarily true. And I want to know more about what has happened elsewhere in the world, and not just in settler colonial states, but how different is deinstitutionalization in other places? What took place? How did that happen, or did it happen? And do other, yeah, I just felt like there was a lot of open, I had a lot of questions about anywhere beyond the US. But I mean, of course, the book is based on that, but I feel like it was kind of just saying everything that is applicable. This is what deinstitutionalization was and is, and this is how it happened and what informed it. But that's just one particular story in one particular place. And we know that in Australia and, you know, in the US, it happened differently and in different places at different times. And I just think there's so much complexity that, we need to look beyond those contexts. So that was a big question for me.
Amber, thank you for your time.
Oh, no, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've just heard Decarcerating Disability, a special program for 3CR's Disability Day broadcast. Stay tuned for more content after this break.
Okay, this one's for Gabby. Thank you.
I'm Nakayan.
I'm Liv.
I'm Warwick.
And you're listening to Imagining Disability Justice on 3CR.
A 12-hour broadcast for International Day of Disability.
Stay tuned.
The 3CR Disability Day 2020 broadcast is proudly supported by the City of Yarra through an Investing in Community grant.